There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to DragonCast, home of House of the Dragon. Gather your small council, send out your ravens and call in your bannermen. I'm Hand of the King, Jamie East, here to guide you through the highly anticipated return to Westeros.
Oh, I'm feeling a little bit ill, Chris.
No.
Am I talking about that Aegon? Or that Aegon? We'll never...
Oh, God, it's all gone wrong. Hello and welcome to DragonCast, home of House of the Dragon. I'm your host and maester of ceremonies, Jamie East. I'm all over the shop. And joining me this week for our regular round of fiery action is, as always, journalist, writer, and the knitted mittens on the hand of the king. Well, it is a little autumnal, isn't it? Chris Mandel, how the devil are you, sir?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm on my third glass of Milk of the Poppy, and I'm absolutely high as a kite.
That's heroin. Can we just... Milk of the Poppy, for drug connoisseurs, that's heroin, is it? It's like a...
I thought it was like more like morphine.
Milkshake of heroin?
I thought it was like a morphine, sort of morphine thing. Because it's, opium, right?
Is morphine not just heroin?
Oh, I don't know. I've never taken heroin knowingly, so I'm not sure.
Listen to your Uncle Jamie. Morphine is just basic. Morphine's just medical skag, mate.
Right. Oh, that's why it's so addictive, I suppose.
Oh, so Moorish. Now, as... First of all, you're going to have to watch the YouTube version of this to see why that intro was so chaotic. And secondly, You may notice that this episode, yet again, it's just Chris and I. But have we got news for you? Because as soon as you've listened to this episode, if you pop back onto your podcast player of choice, we are so excited because we've literally just finished recording it. We are so excited because we have got the podcast exclusive interview with none other than King Viserys I, Paddy Considine. Oh my goodness me. We've had a chat with him. We've just spent half an hour in his company. Without giving any spoilers away, Chris, how was it for you?
It was great. Yeah, he was so, so good. Really pulling apart the episode. Probably shouldn't say any more, but yeah. Absolutely amazing. Yeah. We had a hand last week, and now we have a king with a hand missing. And who knows where we go from here? It's so good.
An actual dragon. I mean, that's as far as
Vhagar is going to be on next week.
Vhagar's on next week. Or Caraxes looking for his looking for her clutch.
Yeah, potentially.
Yeah. Right, should we just get on with this episode?
Let's
because you know, I first of all, I'd like to make a solemn apology to Sky TV. I forgot that I was not supposed to mention that I watched the episode early, and I accidentally did. But it was only because I was so excited. I went on Twitter, and people were like, "Oh, shut up! Don't be ridiculous! You're getting all over excited." Thank you, Twitter. Hello. but I think I was right because I said that that was, I think, in my top three of favorite Thrones episodes of all time, and I stand by that. Think, you know, Red Wedding, The Long Night. And this one, I think, just edges Battle of the Bastards for me because it's all about the heart. I just, oh my goodness me. I watched it last week. I watched it again this morning. Still had goosebumps all the way through. Screamed at my television even more the second time. How was it for you, Chris?
It was great. Can I, before we go into this episode, can I shock you?
Yeah.
Can I shock you? I don't like the Red Wedding episode that much.
Fucking hell. Wow.
Thing is, right, the Red Wedding bit is amazing.
The bit leading up to it? Okay.
45 minutes before then. Oh my God, it's quite boring. So that's my first take out of the day. Straight out the gate. This episode I thought was absolutely amazing. This season is getting better and better. And I think it was just a lot like what we talked about last week, where it was just so many people crammed into a small space with loads of beef and it just all kicked off. There was lots of tension. There was lots of like, it's interesting because when I heard, oh, it's going to be about who gets to inherit Driftmark, I thought, I'm not sure if I care
much.
Cares? Yeah. Yeah. Vaemond Valerian, Corlys's brother, I thought, Not sure if I'm that sort of invested in you generally, but obviously it's a little microcosm, isn't it? It's like a sort of a bit of a political conversation that's actually showing the tension between Rhaenyra and Alison, and it's a sort of microcosm, isn't it, of the larger
chaos. It's the MacGuffin.
Yeah,
it was the MacGuffin, wasn't it? Of the whole episode, it was they had to have something that forced the issue
exactly. And
that brought everything else into the fore.
It allowed for some great development, some great scenes. I thought it was a surprisingly funny episode. Like, it was funny.
Which bit did you laugh at, Chris?
Daemon and Rhaenyra going to visit Viserys. Alicent comes in and is like trying to explain, like, oh yeah, the king is still telling me what to do. And Daemon's like, well, how is he doing that? Through sort of whispers and moans or something. And it's like, Daemon is just there. Like, he is not entertaining Alicent for a second. He sees right through her. And I thought he brought such a good light, sort of jokey energy to the episode, which otherwise could have been a little heavy because it is quite
No, that's a fair point. He took a back seat for most of the scenes, apart from one amazing scythe with the Valyrian steel.
Yeah.
But he really did. Yeah, he made it count. Again, Matt Smith does so much with so little.
Yes. And it's that thing of just, again, when you bring all these people together and you get new combinations of people, that's when it's really exciting. And I think Alicent and Daemon hadn't really spent a lot of time together. So having them butting heads was just really interesting. But I think Daemon has just become way more interesting since Rhaenyra and him have kind of been reunited in a way, because I thought he was great last episode as well.
She completed him.
I completely agree.
All right, let's go back. Before we start, everybody get in touch with us. Let us know what you thought about this incredible episode. Tweet us at dragoncast_pod, email dragoncast@daftdoris.com, or leave your comment in the YouTube video below. Is that where they leave the comments in the YouTube video? I sound every one of my 48 years. Now, the king is dead. Long live the queen. Or will it be king? Will it be king? Will it be queen? We're in a bit of a pickle here, aren't we? Classic Game of Thrones moment where everything seemed set. Everyone was happy. There was a wonderful speech at a dinner table. Granddad had told the grandkids to stop fighting and just calm the hell down. And it seemed as though they'd listened. And then that pesky heroine fogged his brain and caused him to get mixed up between his wife and his daughter, carried on telling the prophecy of the Song of Ice and Fire, and mistakenly, Alicent took that to mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Chris, took that to mean that his dying breath was that, don't tell anyone, but I was lying. It's our son that's the king. Make it so. That's what happened, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's the classic Westeros conundrum. If everyone names their child Aegon and the dying king's wishes are for Aegon to be king, it will create a few problems. Rhaenyra visited Viserys earlier in the episode to say, I need help. I need you to back me up here. Like, I know you name me as heir, but like, everyone is fighting that. And I think when Alicent sort of goes to see him shortly before he dies, he thinks he's still talking to Rhaenyra. So he says, look, no one else knows about the Song of Ice and Fire. No one else knows about the dream. It's you. You've got to help me. It's Aegon. It's you. And obviously, Alicent thinks, oh, it must be my son, Aegon. And of course, he means Aegon the First, the one back in the day.
Now, in any normal world, what would happen now is that Alicent would go, oh my goodness me, my husband's dead. Rhaenyra would go, oh my God, my dad's dead. They go, listen, he said this really weird thing. He mentioned something called the Song of Ice and Fire. Rhaenyra would then go, yeah, what that was. Okay, so there's this prophecy about there's this fucking freezing cold fella north of the wall who's going to come down and resurrect the dead and kill everyone. And she's going to go, oh my God, for a second, I thought he was talking about my son Aegon. No. He was talking about Aegon the Conqueror.
Yeah.
All right, fine. Thank goodness for that. And they move on. It's not going to happen, is it? That's
no.
just, it's all going
to... They're not going to sit and talk about it. They both feel like they know something the other one doesn't. And they both feel closer to Viserys, I think. I think Alicent took this as confirmation. His dying thing was to let me in and tell me the thing that he couldn't tell me. What I think is really interesting is whether Daemon knows about this. I don't think he does, about the Song of Ice and Fire. And I think it's really interesting to just think about how he's going to feel that like everyone's sort of quabbling about his dying wishes. And he goes, hang on, I don't know anything about this threat that's passed through our family because obviously he's the second son. And wasn't as pertinent for him. But yeah, it's a really classic sort of comedy of errors almost in a way, isn't it? Where there's a real mistake. But I think it's really clever because it sets up loads of conflict for the rest of the season. I sort of thought Viserys would maybe die next week. I thought this was going to be a quiet episode of reconciliation. And obviously in dying, now there is nothing stopping these two factions going absolutely apeshit and trying to kill each other. So I think that's where this is going. So it's so exciting to just think about all the chaos that's about to unfold.
Absolutely. And shoot me down with all the book people, if you like. But thoughts you mentioned there, you know, that some, you know, Rhaenyra is still going to have this prophecy in her mind. Is she going to, and I don't know the story, I've not read the book, so bite me. Is she now going to, is part of the storyline would be amazing, I think, because we have talked about how we miss the magic and how we miss that kind of the whole three-eyed raven element of it. Is there going to be a strand of plot now where Rhaenyra is now trying to prove or find out more about this prophecy? Because that would be pretty tantalizing.
Yeah.
Because that would mean the wall. It would mean kind of like a bit of a side mission for Rhaenyra, possibly the kids to kind of, because that's like what everything hinges on. You know, at some point, I'm sure they will have that conversation and Rhaenyra is going to go, no, he's on about the Night King.
Yeah. Might be what gets them out of the capital city going forward.
I mean, we know that they don't find proof because no one believes it until Hardhome.
Yeah, well, we know that Dragonstone is where they find all the dragon glass that, you know, the ancestors left. I mean, maybe Rhaenyra is involved in that in some way. I don't know. Maybe that's, she's a little late for that. Maybe it's already there. But that's kind of funny, right? That like they're sitting on all this dragon glass which kills White Walkers, and they might not know about it. What I would say is I haven't read the books that this show has been adapted from. What I do know, however, because people talked about this after the first episode of the season, is that the Song of Ice and Fire stuff is not in the books. This has been put in the show. And I think it's as a bit of connective tissue to Game of Thrones that like, oh yeah, you know, they're aware of this.
Oh, so this whole misunderstanding's just been generated by TV.
I think the misunderstanding is there, but I don't think it's kind of done in the same way. That is my understanding. That like,
oh, I love that.
So, but I think it's better. I think it's improving, adding more texture, adding a bit more context, because that's a brilliant thing for them to be at loggerheads about, is to misunderstand this prophecy or this dream. And I think also Helena, Viserys' daughter with Alicent, she's clearly got some sort of prophetic dreaming ability. And again, I don't believe that is in the original source material, but is used to show the dream is there. Like this next generation have got this ability. And Viserys died not knowing that because he didn't spend any time bonding with his second wife's children.
It's
irony, right?
So meticulously put together. Yeah. The threads of it all are just wonderful. Let's wind back a bit, because as we said, the MacGuffin of the whole thing was who has the right to sit on the throne at Driftmark.
Yes.
Corlys Velaryon is missing, been missing for 6 years, presumed dead. There was talk, so he got slashed in the neck, thrown overboard, and now has fever of the blood. What do we think the modern day equivalent of blood fever is?
I thought like sepsis, maybe.
Sepsis, meningitis, yeah, something like
and
sepsis.
And he's recovering in the Stormlands, which is kind of near King's Landing.
Now, if that were the case, now I don't want to poo-poo on any kind of plot line here, but if he'd been just near King's Landing for 6 years, wouldn't she just go and see him? Am I missing something here? Would your wife not go and visit? That's just my observation, was just kind of like, he ain't that far away. And you're all going, oh, I don't know if he's dead or not.
Yeah.
Someone's got a dragon. You know, we're all going to King's Landing.
Anyone else need anything on the way? They're like, no, I think we're fine.
I'm just going to go and see if Corlys is alive. Does anyone need any milk? Yeah, exactly. you just literally pop over and see.
Yeah.
Or at least, unless he's gravely ill and couldn't send a raven, you'd at least send a message to the missus, wouldn't you? That's just my thought.
Well, they've literally got dragons, haven't they? They could fly over. So you think he's
dead? Do we think he's dead?
You think he's dead?
No, I don't think he's dead. I think it's too tantalising a door to be left open.
I think dying off screen would be a bit insulting. But yeah, my thing is like, show me the body kind of thing. I think it's just maybe it was a bit too much for him to die and for everything else to go on in this episode. I just love though that they're like, nothing's changed in the last 6 years except the Triarchy. Triarchy's back. It's like, fucking hell. It's like getting rid of cockroaches, isn't it? Like,
Yeah.
They just keep coming back. So, yeah, that was kind of funny that he's been away for 6 years and doing what he does best.
And they'd only just got round to doing it. I mean, I don't want to kind of, you know, I hope that people mourn my passing for many, many decades. But if my family was still sat around 6 years later wondering what to do next, I'd be like, come on, guys. It's like there's direct debits to be sorted out.
Yeah.
You know, you'd move on, I think. One little scene, which didn't seem to have that much significance in the capacity of episode 8, but I think will have moving forward, was Damon going on this kind of Indiana Jones archaeological kind of visit and found a clutch of Syrax's eggs. Now, you've said before that you've enjoyed this element of exploring how dragons function. We've not yet seen one take a shit yet, though. Come on, Miguel, sort it out. But we have seen how they lay eggs, and that's seemingly they find a little private crevice somewhere, bury them in lava. I'm going to say it's some cooling kind of rock.
Yeah.
It's good scene, I thought.
I thought it was really interesting. And, you know, kind of what I thought was interesting is they could have explained that in dialogue, but they wanted to show it. And that is something that we have said a few times. Like, I don't quite understand how this works. Like, are the dragons shagging or are they like, do you know what I mean? It's a big, well, I don't want to see that, but like, it's a bit weird.
It sounds like you made that apology a bit too soon. How else would they?
Well, snakes produce themselves, don't they? Like,
I don't know. Do snakes not shag? Is there no such thing as a snake dick?
What? Where? They can't. I don't think they do. Some animals can reproduce themselves. Like, they don't need, they have both parts. Maybe dragons do.
Hang on a sec. Little sidebar. Dragoncast fans, bear with us 1 minute because I'm just Googling, do snakes have dicks? Snakes have two penises.
What?
Called hemipenis. There you go.
Wow. I went from thinking they have zero to finding out they have two.
Yeah. They've not only got one, they got two. So literally in your face.
So basically, yeah, let's get back to Syrax. So Syrax has three eggs that they will put in a Le Creuset and heat on low for a few days. And I don't know how it kind of works. But we were sort of wondering kind of who they are going to get given to, who they're going to go to. But yeah. Rhaenyra, we found out this episode, has two children with Daemon and she looked pregnant. So I guess they're going to go
to... There was a definite pat of the tummy, wasn't there?
Yes.
There was a definite pat of the tummy.
So she now has her own Aegon, Aegon the Third.
Yeah.
And she also has Viserys.
Yeah, Viserys. Joffrey's one of the dark-haired...
she's got five now. So she has...
Okay, fine.
Jace, Luke, Joffrey, Aegon the Third... and Viserys. And a sixth on the way. I mean, they're going to have to move into a bigger castle at this point, aren't they?
I mean, yeah. At what point? I mean, there's no contraception there at all, is it? Is there? Maybe that's
there's
part
also
of the
nothing else to do.
This is, well, yeah, this is true. You kill or shag, really, don't you?
Yeah. It does make me worry because are we going to have more like recasting, aging up, recasting? It's like a creche in this.
It's difficult to know which ones to care about as well, isn't it?
Yes. But what we should talk about is that the kids in this time jump, the kids have grown up. The young ones are now sort of young teenagers, young adults. So Jace, who is Rhaenyra's eldest son with Harwin Strong in secret, although everyone's claiming he's Laenor's, he's been recast. He's kind of like a young sort of Jon Snow. He was learning his High Valyrian. Because he thinks he's going to be king after his mum, and he's like, I should learn. And I thought that was really sweet. Yeah. Like, he's being really, really studious and very academic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Meanwhile, on Team Green, Alicent's eldest son, Aegon II, is a lazy, violent rapist, basically. Alicent gets a visitor in the form of one of the maidens, one of the handmaidens, one of the serving girls, who says that Aegon II raped her, and Alicent pays her off, gives her a big old mug of moon tea and says, like, sling your hook, basically. We don't need any bastards around here that are, you know, got a line to the throne. But it's interesting, isn't it? You've got these two sets of kids. Some of them are lazy, entitled, awful scumbags, and then some of them are like quite sweet natured lads.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're seeing this animosity between the families really kind of rearing its head again, aren't we? It's not going away.
I thought the Strong children in particular reminded me of Game of Thrones season one kids, Jon Snow, bit of Gendry, bit of Theon. Their hair was still very neat and tidy. They hadn't quite got season four of any series. The hair, they looked very made up and kind of, I think they were still trying to find their feet a bit in their scenes. Whereas the Aegon and Aemon were just seemed to be very, very fully formed characters.
Yeah. Aemon looks about 35. Oh. We talked about this last week, but
he just looks brilliant. Yeah. There is an element of him where it's just like, it wouldn't surprise you if he appeared in John Wick.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's just got that look about him. He could just walk in and start attacking Keanu Reeves at any moment, but he's just got a brilliant face, hasn't he? Proper Targaryen face.
Eye patch. I think he looks a lot like Daemon, actually. I think there's a sort of similarity.
Yeah.
The second son, who's probably not going to get on the throne.
Well, I mentioned there was a standoff, wasn't there? After Viserys had gone away, carried off on his chair at the dinner, where all the kids kicked off and Daemon held back from having a go at Aemon, I think. Mm. I think they're going to butt heads at some point, those two are. They circle each other a little bit. There's a little bit of the old the Hound and the Mountain about their kind of connection, I think.
We talked about this in our interview with Paddy, but I think Alicent's children with Viserys haven't spent much time with their father at all. Viserys seems to have, consciously avoided them because he doesn't really feel anything towards them. And these boys have got absolutely zero idea of what a good male role model looks like. So Kristen is sort of training them with a bit of an iron fist. Their mother is constantly at her wit's end and they are like really toxic young men as a result. Whereas I do think that like, even though Rhaenyra's kids, three of them are bastards, you know, they are raised with care and they're raised with love. And I think you can see that already, this divisiveness. So yeah, there's a lot with the younger cast, but then obviously everybody was sort of at loggerheads of this episode. I thought one thing I really wanted to talk about was Rhaenys, the queen that never was, having a bit of a confrontation with Rhaenyra at the Godswood.
Yeah.
What did you think of that?
I thought it was good. I thought finally, you know, it's nice to see Eve Best get some decent screen time.
Yeah.
And I think we're clearly going to see more of her as time goes on. It was nice that that thing is coming full circle. A lot of that happened in this episode was that actually everything rested on Rhaenys' decision,
you know,
whether or not she was going to back Rhaenyra or go with the Velaryons. So I like seeing Rhaenyra and Rhaenys together because there's a bit of mutual respect there whereby, you know, Rhaenys wanted it, but didn't get it. And Rhaenyra at the time didn't want it and got it. And I think she's mothering Rhaenyra a little bit as well. And I think the exchange of, you know, they don't muck around, do they? Marrying off their kids and chucking away dragon eggs. It gave Rhaenyra an out and it gave Rhaenys an out as well. It was the logical thing that saved both of them from making really bad decisions, I think. So I enjoyed it.
Yeah, they've got a common enemy in the Hightowers,
yeah.
I think. But I think also what I found really interesting about that scene was that, you know, Rhaenyra, who was told, like, you have to have a husband, I don't care who, you have to find someone. You know, she's doing the same to Laena and Baelor. She's like, you're going to just have to marry my boys. Like, sorry, that's how it goes. And I think it's really interesting where you're seeing it going, like, look, I know you want to be free, you might want to be free-spirited like I once was, but, like, tough shit. Like, my back's against the wall. I need support.
Yeah.
And yeah, she made what Rhaenys described as a generous offer or a desperate one. You know, we saw Rhaenyra try and betroth one of her sons to Helaena a couple of episodes ago, and it was rebuffed by Alicent. So here she's actually gone with both of her kids. But yeah, I didn't know where Rhaenys was going to go because obviously last week, Laenor died in quotation marks, and they sort of set up framed his murder. And Rhaenys obviously thinks that Rhaenyra and Daemon were involved in that. How could she not? Because minutes later, they've gone and, you know, face painted with their own blood on the beach, and they've got married. And they sort of cleared the air this episode. I don't know how convinced she is by that, but I think it was good to just get them on the same team because it was like a sort of courtroom drama in this episode where they were really talking about the who's going to take over Driftmark. But again, they were really saying like, this could be a trap. The Hightowers could use this to say, these kids are bastards, and disinherit Rhaenyra. So it was really tense, and I didn't know which way Eve Best was playing it.
There was a moment where I thought Rhaenyra was going to fess up about Laenor.
I did too. I really did too.
Because I think Rhaenys would have understood.
Yeah.
You know, I think that now that with Corlys out of the picture, I don't think it would have been a massive stretch for Rhaenyra to go, look, he's not dead.
He's alive somewhere.
He's getting ploughed every which way but Sunday on Mykonos somewhere.
Him and Carl are at a circuit party in Pentos.
Exactly. There's a phone party kicking off. Carl Cox has just arrived. Just leave them be. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But then, hey, that's why we don't write House of the Dragon, because it would be one episode long.
Yeah, exactly. I
enjoyed it, and I think Rhaenyra has got is a much needed ally.
And let's not forget, the thing that you need, they are going to need, is dragons. So you need the Valyrians on your side, because if they go to the Hightowers, you are talking like, I don't know, 7 dragons versus 3, like it's a no-brainer. So I think also Rhaenys, I think, is probably feeling a lot of betrayal that Aemon stole her late daughter's dragon. You know, that's big. They took Vhagar.
Oh, yes.
That's bad. Yeah, that's now could be used that, against her. So she's going to need support. So it was really interesting seeing them sort of reconcile, even if it was a bit tenuous. But I love that Rhaenys was able to kind of go front and center in that courtroom scene. And I felt like she got in a position of power that she's not really been given for most of her life. She finally got to have a bit of a say in what was going to go on with Driftmark.
You mentioned Vhagar there, and that is this week's wisdom. Actually, we're going to talk about Vhagar. She's still going to play a massive part, I think, moving forward, even more so. She's the biggest dragon. So I thought after last week's dragon coup, it was high time we delved into a bit of Vhagar wisdom. Vhagar is an enormous she-dragon of House Targaryen. She was ridden by Queen Visenya Targaryen during Aegon's conquest, alongside Aegon the Conqueror's Balerion and their sister Rhaenys' dragon Meraxes. Following the deaths of Rhaenys and Meraxes in 10 AC at Hellholt in Dorne, Visenya and Aegon burnt almost every Dornish stronghold during a 2-year period known as the Dragon's Wrath. When King Aegon the Conqueror died in 37 AC, it was Vhagar's flames that lit his funeral pyre. Visenya died on Dragonstone in 44 AC, leaving Vhagar without a rider. She remained unridden for 29 years, spending much of that time on Dragonstone and later taking residence in the Dragon Pit in King's Landing. It was in 73 AC that Prince Balon the Brave set out to become a dragon rider and claimed Vhagar. Along with Caraxes and Vermithor, Vhagar burned the Dornish fleet that attempted to invade the Stormlands during the Fourth Dornish War in 83 AC. And I hope you're taking notes, because I will be testing you later. After the death of Balerion of old age in 94 AC, what a timeline, Vhagar became the last of the 3 Targaryen dragons who'd fought in the conquest and the last living creature to see old Valyria. Vhagar became riderless again when Prince Balon passed away in 101 AC. Princess Laena Velaryon would become the next to mount Vhagar, and when she wed Prince Daemon Targaryen, they flew upon their dragons across the narrow sea to Pentos. Everywhere they went, huge crowds came to catch a glimpse of Vhagar and Caraxes. When Laena was in labour with their 3rd child and it was clear neither mother nor babe would survive, Laena commanded her mount to give her the death of a dragon rider, and Vhagar consumed her with her flames. Now Aemon Targaryens claim Vhagar, becoming the 4th to mount the Great Beast and giving the Greens a massive boost in firepower. Vhagar's grown almost as large as Balerion and is now the oldest and largest of the dragons in Westeros. She's the hardened survivor of countless battles, but only time will tell if there are more yet to come. Battles, that is, not dragons. That's your wisdom for this week. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, I think we need to talk about Viserys's long walk to the throne, his decision, the Last Supper, and maybe a bit more about that crazy misunderstanding. Don't go away.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Welcome back to Dragoncast. This is episode 9 of Dragoncast, but confusingly, and I wish I'd never started it, episode 8 of House of the Dragon is our subject. I'm with Chris Mandel, as always. Hello, Chris.
Hello.
Quick shout out, just a reminder, if you've just joined us late, although do people join podcasts late? That would be a bit weird.
Very hard to
do. Don't forget to go. Exactly, it's very hard to do. It's, you have to make a concerted effort to scrub all the way to the midpoint. We do have our bonus episode with none other than King Viserys himself, Paddy Considine, in a podcast world exclusive, speaking to us the day of his final episode on House of the Dragon, and what a conversation it is. But you'll have to wait just a little bit for that. So we're in the throne room. It's all kicking off. Everyone's had their say. Rhaenyra is about to say, well, she starts off saying this is an absolute farce. Otto is looking pretty damn pleased with himself. Alicent too. And then the door opens and everything changes. What a scene, Chris. What a scene.
It was so good. I mean, I love a courtroom drama at the best of times, but what I loved is that Viserys managed to dramatically open the doors at that time, given it takes him like half an hour to get down the stairs. He must have planned it at 4 a.m. Like, it's going to take, I have to go here, I'm going to have to stop for a rest. I loved it because, you know,
it's like the sloth in Zootopia.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But, you know, this episode's been so interesting because the Hightowers are pretending to like work on behalf of the king, speak on behalf of the king, and even sit on the throne. Alicent and Otto both sit on the throne, which, given that they're not the king or the queen, technically, is a bit of an affront. So to see Viserys and to see their reactions was really, really interesting. And his ascent was fantastic. We talked about this a little bit in our episode with our interview.
Yeah, don't give anything away.
Okay.
Don't give anything away.
No, you mean about my theory?
Oh, no, yeah, go about it. You can talk about your theory. Yes, talk about your theory.
That's all I want to say.
I'll allow it.
Basically, what my impression watching this was that because Viserys has got his walking sticks and he's hunched over and he kind of very gently kind of like goes like this. I'm sort of doing it on the camera. He looks like a dragon about to take flight. And this whole walk up to the throne room is like his runway. And I thought it was so cleverly realized because he is the king that does not have a dragon. He is the old dragon. He's the dying dragon. And he takes one last flight. And I thought it was so, so cool. And that's kind of how I saw it. It was this amazing ascension for him. It's slow. It's not as glamorous. He drops the crown, but he sits there and he sort of passes judgment on the whole thing. He does call the whole thing a farce and he uses his powers as king to sort of, you know, vote in Rhaenyra's favor. He kind of says this whole thing is a joke, like, basically, doesn't he?
Yeah. It kind of has this renewed energy. His, you know, his voice, he finds his voice again. He even manages to pull out the cat's paw dagger at one point as well, when he was going to get stuck in. And it was just a beautiful scene. The moment between Viserys and Daemon on the steps of the throne was just glorious. We talk about that at great length with Paddy.
Yeah.
So you'll have to wait a little bit to hear about the story behind that. But let's cut to the chase. What a great death. What a brilliant death that was, Chris.
You know, we've seen a lot of death in Westeros. I've never seen someone's head get chopped off, but their tongue stay in their mouth. So I thought that was
brilliantly done.
Yeah. Incredible, because Daemon did it from behind. What is really great is that Rhaenys says to Vaemond early in the episode, "You will have your tongue out for this." they will have your tongue out for this if you call them bastards. And he actually doesn't. His tongue actually stays in. It's just the rest of his head that gets taken off.
Yeah. Yeah,
it was brutal. I really jumped when I saw that.
There was a series in the early noughties, or maybe the late 90s, where they took the body of a serial killer and sliced him up into tiny little... Did you ever see that?
No.
Where they like, did it just as an experiment?
That German doctor?
Oh, no, it wasn't the weird Dr. Death fella. Oh. It was a documentary, I think, and it just reminded me exactly of that. It just looked like an MRI scan, didn't it?
Yeah.
It was so good. Never underestimate the sharpness of Valerian Steel.
It was such a shock. I thought he would get executed in a slightly more like noble fashion, Damon just, and it was so shocking. And I think it kind of speaks to what we talked about last week, where Rhaenyra and Damon are a bit like, listen, we're going to have to start ruling through fear a little bit. And I think there's a bit of this Bonnie and Clyde of Targaryens in full effect. And I thought it was incredible. But you know, Vaemond for me, we haven't really had a lot of time with him, and I feel a bit like, what do you think about him?
I enjoyed his performance. I think he was necessary to kind of rile up Corlys a little bit.
Yes.
Because he was, you know, Corlys was in the middle, and he's, you know, Rhaenys was on one side and Vaemond on the other. So I think that was what his purpose was in terms of serving the narrative of the series, was to get Corlys wound up about people don't remember blood, they remember names and all of that kind of stuff. Whereas actually, although Vaemond was very much on the opposite of that thinking, he said it is all about the blood. But it was all right. I think, you know, I'm not going to miss him. You know, I don't think it served his purpose, I think.
One thing I thought was interesting that I think maybe came up when they were talking to Alicent was, maybe it was at the small council, they said, you know, we might be about to go into war, and we don't want the head of our fleet being a child. And that's not how choosing succession works, right? The line of succession is what it is. But I can sort of see like a slightly businessy case for like choosing this role strategically. But I think Vaemond is a sort of very classic Westerosi character of like, you were right that they are bastards, but if you don't learn how to manage the flow of information, you are going to get killed. Like it's a bit of a Ned Stark thing actually, because that's basically what happened to him, right?
True.
He tried to sort of say, the king's heirs are bastards, and he, you win or you die. So I kind of think it was necessary, as you said, a good counterpoint, but you know, the body count really is piling up, and House Valyrian is getting a lot smaller, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think the future coalition seems quite far away. You know, they're still babies.
Yeah.
You know, the dragons that we're talking about, they're still eggs.
Yeah.
You know, so it's still far away. Let's move on to the Last Supper, because part of, you know, the people that we haven't really spoken about a lot, given the part they're going to play moving forward, is Alicent and Otto. Otto, again, you know, very few lines, but has really come out. He's pulled the mask back and is now full villain. Are they being driven by the faith of the Seven? Is there a sparrow somewhere that is going to be revealed at some point to be kind of manipulating them in the same way that the High Sparrow was with
Cersei and Margaerine
with Cersei and Margaerine and all of those lot? Because the religious angle for Alicent is that, and I watched in the behind the episode on YouTube, which everyone should go and watch. I think Miguel Sapochnik says that Alicent sees the faith of the Seven as a way of her redeeming herself, which kind of feels a bit iffy to me. Do you think that Otto is a believer in the faith of the Seven as well, or is that just her thing? Is it like she's charging her crystals in front of the moon kind of thing?
Well, I think they are, because I think the old gods are really only followed by like the Northerners, the Wildlings, and like the ancient houses like the Targaryens. So I think they worship the Seven in Old Town, where the Hightowers are from. What I think is interesting is, as you sort of said there, just the way that Alicent is wearing this like armor, that seven-pointed star almost looks like a weapon. The chains, the slightly more conservative dress, reminded me of Cersei. It reminded me of people who use religion to as a cover for like quite villainous acts themselves. You know, she was really quite
Catholic Church.
Yeah. She was really a force to be reckoned with, but she was doing it under the guise of like religious piety and like wholesomeness. And I thought it was interesting that Rhaenyra and Daemon both said, we don't even recognize this castle, because they've been hanging Faith of the Seven sigils and things from the walls.
Yeah, they were mentioned that they'd covered all the murals up. Yeah. Apparently those murals showed erotic dragon art, which I can't say I'd noticed.
That is an absolutely amazing detail. I think it's a way for them to flex. I think also, you know, it's just a way to show that they've moved in. Like, you know, if I was having to sit in a church on a throne, I'd probably bring my Sonos speaker, I'd probably bring a candle from Muji. You know, I'd bring a few things to just make it feel a little bit more like
Are you a Muji guy? Muji guy?
The bonfire candle. Yeah.
The bonfire candle from Muji, okay.
This is not sponsored, by the way.
It's not, but I'd love to be. So White Company, I love your pomegranate. Please send lots of them. Thank you. Wow. Hashtag ad.
We should do
hashtag
a candle episode.
Oh my God, don't start me off. DS and Durga.
I thought, just a very interesting way to show them flexing themselves. And yeah, there was a lot more green hanging. There was a lot more of the seven-pointed star. I mean, on Westeros, it seems to be like, you know, the religions are all sort of, it's like preaching the same thing. They just, you know, are choosing to interpret it a bit differently. But yeah.
And so we're in the Last Supper. Otto's kind of like begrudgingly had to sort out the buffet a moment's notice. He didn't seem particularly happy about that.
It looked good though.
It did look good. Just rustle up a few suckling pigs as you do. Yeah. And the whole family were there, and it did weirdly did feel very much like a slightly enforced family get together, didn't it?
Yeah.
It was like I've been to those dinners. You know, it felt a bit like that, didn't it?
Yeah.
It was a tour de force from Paddy again. It was just, the speech was amazing. The sentiment was great. The visual effects. I mean, he was part Two-Face from The Dark Knight. Mm. What was Gary Oldman's character from Hannibal? Virgil somebody or other.
Yeah.
I don't know if anyone's seen that. It was very much like
that
as well.
Didn't it make you think of the crab feeder though, that mask? Like, I was like, is it inspired by that? Is seeing the crab feeder like, has that been sort of part of the, oh, we could make a similar thing? Like, it was obviously a bit newer looking, but I thought, how interesting that...
Maybe that's what the crab feeder's purpose for was.
Yeah.
For. We were always wondering.
You know, it's really... But it was really interesting, just the reveal when it comes off. You know, we knew something grotesque was under there. And it was so...
And
also, right in front of the food, you're like, oh, lovely... hollowed out cheek.
No, it's like bits. It's like, yeah, how does he eat? I mean, he clearly passed eating. Like the tendons, it was great.
It was really detailed. So there was a really powerful moment. And again, we do talk about this quite a lot in our interview with Paddy, but just that he takes off the mask in a literal sense and says that being the king and absorbing all of the blows from this family has basically done me in. And please stop looking at me as a king. Look at me as a father, brother, you know, and all
if
that.
If not for the crown, for this old man who loves you all so deeply. I mean, it was just such a great line.
There was such a sense of reconciliation in this episode that they figured out, they realized, and I thought Alison and Rhaenyra particularly managed to bury some of this. But I think what we talked about last week was they do seem to be in a better position, but the rot has set into the next generation and they can't stop that in the way that Viserys couldn't stop, you know, what's going on. And it goes on and on. And so, you know, we saw the kids trading.
And there was a great moment between Alicent and Rhaenyra where Alicent actually stroked her scar with her thumb. Did you notice that?
I thought that was really,
she was like holding hands and she was just like stroked her scar.
Did you see they first reunited at the start of the episode, Rhaenyra covers the scar with her sleeve. Because she doesn't want Alison to see it, to see what's still there. And so that moment when she touches it, and I really thought like, oh, they are sort of towards mending this.
They were. They were reminded that they were friends, that it was and that actually they've ended up where they are because of men, because of the patriarchy,
they didn't sign up
to be enemies. They were forced, and this is just where they were forced.
I was going to say, speaking of that, you know, there was a lot of animosity in that scene. What I loved was Jace, Rhaenyra's eldest, having a dance with Helena, which just sort of didn't have a great deal of context, but it was really sincere. And she seemed really happy. And it was just like, oh, yeah, you there's something really warm about this family. And just Jace, to me, absolute standout lad. Like, what a sweetheart.
Good lad.
Good lad. And even Helena, like, she seems fairly less evil in the grand scheme of things. And I just loved that moment where they stood away and they were just having a bit of time together. I thought that was really nice.
Who was Helena on about? They were talking about, obviously, there was the going on about sex with, you know, Jace and Aegon was teasing Jace about sex and all of that kind of stuff. But then Helena stood up and said, it's not too bad. He usually ignores you except when he's drunk. Is she referring to someone?
She's referring to her husband, which is Aegon.
Right. I understand that.
So she's like, and that's what's so awful about it is she's talking about her brother. And she's just like, yeah, oh, yeah, you know, it's all right, really. You know, I've had a few drinks. So Aegon and her were betrothed, I think, last episode.
Of course,
and then now they are married. And I wasn't sure, but, like, maybe she's pregnant as well. I don't know. But she did say something this episode that I put the subtitles on for. You know,
go on.
Helena is now a dreamer, right? So we have started to see that things...
she's a dreamer.
She said, I've written this down. Beware of the beast below the boards.
Yes. Yes. I wrote that down as well. What does that mean?
Well, my immediate thought was the dragon pit because there are dragons underground. I wonder if like Vhagar is going to break out or if one of them is going to go kind of wild and kill a load of dragons or like something about the dragon pit.
Yeah, I think you're right. Maybe that ties into why we were shown where the nesting bit was.
It must be.
But because one thing I did think, like earlier on in this episode where you counted out how many dragons there were, I was thinking, that feels like too many dragons.
Yeah.
That feels like a lot of dragons. It feels like, you know, what, 10 dragons? I'm kind of thinking, I don't think there's going to be 10 dragons fighting each other.
Well,
make sense.
Listen, we all pay our Now TV subscription, but even all the subscriptions in the world can't afford for 10 dragons to be carrying on.
How many goats? Yeah, exactly. How many goats?
Well, it's interesting. We've not seen any dragons die yet. And I do think whether through age, whether through accident, some of them won't grow up to be really big. Some of them might die in their infancy. You know, there's got to be a bit of a clearing of the decks at some point. So,
and I was going to, was it last episode where I said I was going to try and work out who Daenerys's... Are their grandparents, is Daenerys' dragon's grandparents alive yet?
I mean, it's hard to tell because Daenerys' dragon eggs were petrified. So they were sort of almost fossilized. Yeah. I think it'll be a bit soon. I think all the ones that there are eggs of will hatch and be dragons that her three may descend from. But
right.
I sort of don't mind. I don't feel like I really need them to like join the dots up that much at this point.
No, I was just intrigued.
Yeah,
I can
definitely
work out. The passing of time. Are any of these dragons here going to be parents to Daenerys's dragons?
Yeah.
Last supper over. Everyone's like, oh, that's nice. Lovely stuff. We can all pack up. That was the last episode of House of the Dragon. It's all been sorted. Thank you very much. And then in such a brilliant scene that had me screaming, the misunderstanding, the miscommunication, whatever you want to call it. Just brilliant. You know, Alison just saying, I understand, my king. I mean, she didn't. You literally didn't. You misunderstood it, you stupid person. But in her mind, she's now clear on what she must do, and that is to overthrow Viserys' last wish, which is just brilliant.
But it's interesting. She thinks she's following his last words. It's you.
Yeah, she thinks she's been let in.
And I think the religious thing you mentioned earlier is really helpful because it feels like they both think they've got a sign from above. Like, I've seen the light. I get it now. I'm a convert. I get it. But they can't both be right. So I think that's what's so fascinating is, Alicent like definitely is getting a little bit more corrupted by her father. She's definitely a bit more sinister. But, you know, I think it goes both ways. I think Rhaenyra is obviously also like willing to do a lot to keep her family safe. But I think Alicent is still fundamentally trying to do the right thing. I think you can see, like, especially with her sons, like the lack of control she has over them is a worry for her. And I think she's thinking, right, well, I'm going to have to do right by my husband because I'm a good wife. I'm a good mother to these sons. So it's going to really, I mean, I just think it's going to be outright war at this point. Oh,
well, I'll tell you, you know, obviously there was more from Viserys and there was more from Viserys's point of view and there was Viserys's last moments as well. No point in us talking about that now because, you know what, we've already had easily the best conversation that anyone on the planet could be having today of all days about those last moments of Viserys because we asked Viserys himself. So Paddy, and he spoke so eloquently and beautifully about it. You just have to wait for the bonus episode, which will have dropped probably by now if you're listening to this. It's there. So, you know, go and listen to that. Now, episode 9, we've only got 2 episodes left.
I can't believe
And you know, traditionally, you know, episode 9, by the time we got to kind of season 7 or 8 of Thrones, we were like, episode 9's where it's at, baby. I don't know, they've probably purposefully broken that mold now. Mm. I would imagine if I was them, I probably would have done the same. But with what we were left with at the end of episode 8, who the hell can guess? Shall we watch it?
Let's do it. Let's watch this episode 9 trailer.
Let's do it.
The king is dead.
He told me he wished for Aegon to be king.
The door remains shut until we finish our business. None can know who you are or what you seek.
What of Rhaenyra?
I have found out something you should know.
Seizure! It is treason, at the least!
Have you never imagined yourself on the Iron Throne?
Oh, bloody hell. It's all kicking off. It's all kicking off, lads.
It's about to go off, isn't it?
So, from what I can gather there, I mean, it's pretty obvious that in light of Viserys' death, Alicent reveals what she believes to be his dying wish, mm-hmm. which was for Aegon to be king. We see Otto, they seem to have locked the throne room, saying the door remains shut until we finish our business. One of the small counts, I forget his name.
Is it Lord Beesbury
Lord Beesbury, the Master of Coin, I think he is, isn't he? He was saying, you know, this isn't just treason. It's what's the word he used?
I think he said
seizure.
Yeah.
It's a seizure. But no glimpse of Rhaenyra, no glimpse of Daemon. We see Otto saying, none can know who you are or what you seek to someone with long, dark hair, which I don't think is Alicent, but maybe.
I think. So in this...
There's a lot of murder cloaks being worn.
Oh my God. The murder cloak collection by Uniqlo is clearly selling like hotcakes in Westeros. No, I think... So there was a new character in this episode, in episode 8, who is like a twin... There's these guards that are twins. And they're played by Luke and Elliot Tittensor, who were in Shameless. Do you remember that?
Okay.
Played Carl and Shameless. And I saw them in the cast and I was like, oh, when are they going to come up? And Alicent spoke to one of them, Eric and Arik Cargill.
God, the fucking names again. Just give them different names. Eric and Arik.
Producer Connor just put that in the chat. Eric and Arik. I mean, for goodness sake, guys, at least there was one of them not called Aegon. Do you know what I mean? So they are guards. I think they have different kind of roles in the... I kind of thought it looked like it might be one of them, but I can't be sure.
Okay, fine. Well, I'll take that. That makes a lot of sense. So we don't see Daemon, we don't see Rhaenyra, but we do see Lara Strong speaking to Alicent, saying, I found out something you should know. Mm-hmm. Then that cuts very quickly to a very small Targaryen child in prison, which I presume is, that was your man. Again, they all look like baby Boris, don't they?
And one of
the new ones. Joffrey?
Well, no, because Joffrey's got strong hair, hasn't he? So I think it'll be Aegon III or Viserys.
Or
the new one. It can't be the new one because I think he'll be smaller.
No, it can't be the new one. I think this is literally the next day, isn't it?
Any Rhaenyra loyalists, because they were putting some of the maids and stuff in the cells, and there's a baby in a cell, which just seems absolutely, it's like Alison Hightower's like putting children in cages on the Mexican border. It's her sort of Mexican border moment.
Yeah.
Locking up all the kids.
We see Kristen Cole getting stuck in. And so he's gone. So we see there. So this is the look. You remember a couple of episodes back, we were talking about the looks and the relationship between Kristen Cole and the other Kingsguard, the guy. The bald guy with the
Graham
beard.
Graham McTaggart.
Oh, my God. Graham McTaggart, yeah. We see those two fighting. Harold Westerling. Yeah, so we see those two at each other's throats with swords. So, yeah, it looks like it's a coup of the highest order.
Connor's suggestion is that the blonde baby is Aegon's, had a bastard of Aegon. Like, he's got another girl pregnant and she's had a little baby. And they're like, no, you're actually like a direct, you're like an heir to the king, future king. Like, we need to lock you up. Jesus Christ. They're going to start killing babies, aren't they? It's going to be too much.
Yeah, I don't think we need that. We see a very angry Aegon. He doesn't look happy. He doesn't look like a man who's pleased to be crowned king. Mm-mm. But then, pleasingly, Rhaenys seemed to play a bigger part in that. We saw her going into the door earlier on, and then it's her voice at the end that says, "Have you never imagined yourself on the Iron Throne?" We don't know who she said.
I thought from the trailer that she'd been locked in her room as well. Do you not think, is that what she was? I thought she was kind of like banging against the door.
Yeah, there might be a bit of subterfuge where they're playing Rhaenys' voice over someone else's hands with the...
It looks great. I think this and 10 just feel like maybe they could be like a two-part sort of finale in a way.
Yeah.
It's going to kick off, isn't it?
It is. And I've got, and beautifully, and my favourite part of it is I've got no idea how it's going to
I think you're right, though. I think they've broken... I don't think it's going to be like a traditional episode 9, but who knows?
No. There's no mic drop, I don't think. But it looks absolutely fantastic. Wow, I can't wait, Chris. We do have a question to pose to our listeners, actually, and it's kind of unrelated to House of the Dragon in a way. Mm. We're really bowled over by the success of the podcast. It's been fantastic and it's been growing every single week. And we don't want to stop, mainly because, I mean, me and Chris dearly love each other. But also it just seems like such a waste of a great conversation, because this is my favourite part of the week, hands down, is spending this hour talking about House of the Dragon with Chris and to you guys and getting your feedback as well. So here's the question. How do we keep Dragoncast going when there's no House of the Dragon? Obviously, there'll be bits of news feeding through, but my intuition is telling me that we're not going to see season 2 of House of the Dragon until April 2024, I think. That's not based on any insider knowledge whatsoever. I just think that Game of Thrones was traditionally premiered in April. I think a bit like the London Marathon after COVID, they're going to try and get back there eventually. So that's a long time to be without this series. And it feels a bit weird just to kind of drop it in 2 weeks' time and say, well, we'll see you in about 18 months. Mm. So we'd like your opinion on that. Would you like to hear us keeping on talking about, obviously, we'll be true to Thrones Land and true to Westeros whenever there is any news or opportunity to speak to anybody. But I don't know, kind of thinking there are other shows as well that we could be talking about, which I think you'd probably like as well. I think if you like Game of Thrones and you like the kind of shows that we like, then, you know, The Last of Us is coming up. That looks brilliant. There's that one with, what's the one that's on the Peripherals? That looks pretty good as well.
There's a lot of good telly out there.
There's some great telly out there.
Even scope, once we've finished this season and we know how the season one ends, there might be scope for a deep dive back into House of the Dragon and, you know, doing a kind of, you know, let's see if our opinion on things have changed, the things that didn't work, maybe they worked better. Like, you know, there's maybe details very early on that we've missed, so that could work. But
yeah, this is true.
Yeah, we might have a long wait unless HBO want to send us on set and just report.
I mean,
on what's going down.
Oh, Chris.
Get us out there.
I mean, why wouldn't they?
Well,
I mean,
Paddy
apart from money
us.
And...
Paddy. Oh, no, he's not on. Shit.
Sure, I wonder if his pass still works.
Maybe he's...
Can we get his swipe card? Can we get Paddy's swipe card
I
off him?
Thought, oh, we've got a new friend, Paddy, and then I just remembered he died.
That's why he's our friend, is because he doesn't need to talk to us about House of the Dragon anymore.
That was my meal ticket. Okay.
But listen, get in touch. Leave us a Twitter comment at dragoncast_pod. Send us an email, dragoncast@daftdoris.com. Leave a comment on the YouTube. We want to keep the conversation going, but we're not going to do it if you don't want to listen. You know, I kind of think that we'll have lots of interesting stuff to talk about, but would love your feedback on that as well. So, until next time, go and listen to the Paddy episode, because it is absolutely fantastic. It's one of the best interviews I've ever been a part of. I loved it so, so much.
Also, can I do a cheeky plug?
Yeah,
you know what I'm going to do, don't you?
Oh, of course. Hey.
I've waited. Go for it, Chris. So I feel like I should have got this in earlier. So I interviewed Paddy for GQ. It's online today. So if you go on GQ's website, big, big interview with him that is kind of timed to this episode. And I went up to meet him last month in Burton-on-Trent, where he lives. We spent the afternoon together, and yeah, big, big profile. Very proud of it. And if you liked our chat with him, you'll probably really enjoy reading that as well.
Go read it. It's fantastic. Chris is, you know, aside from just chatting shit on air every week, he's a brilliant journalist.
Also,
don't tell him
I get a little tease? That is not the only cast member I have interviewed. I cannot say any more, but keep your eyes on the prize.
You haven't even told me that.
Well, I'll tell you when we stop recording.
Little fucker. Seems like the master of whispers.
I am.
Fucking Lara Strong here.
Of the podcast. For the Paddy piece as well, Emily Carey, who played young Alicent, spoke to me a bit, which was great. She's in there a very little bit.
She's dynamite.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely lovely. But yeah, I'll tell you when we stop filming.
Dragoncast fans, Chris, thank you so much for chatting. Go and listen to the Paddy episode. We will see you next week for the penultimate discussion on House of the Dragon Season 1. Dracarys. Don't forget, House of the Dragon airs exclusively on Sky Atlantic at 2 a.m. every Monday, then repeats that same evening at 10. You can also get it on demand via Now. If you'd like to get involved in the podcast, just head over to Twitter @DragonCast_pod or email DragonCast@daftdoris.com and leave us your Easter eggs, predictions and thoughts on the show. You can also watch this episode over on our YouTube channel. Just search for DragonCast Jamie East. Any support, whether it's a follow, a share, a mention to your friend on the bus or a tattoo on your backside, is very much appreciated. Dragoncast is hosted by me, Jamie East, along with Chris Mandel, produced by Connor Driscoll, edited by Buddy Peace, and is a Daft Doris production. Dracarys.